Welcome, friend. Come, traveler, seeker of divine knowledge. Welcome to the temple of the dividend discount models. Here, you will be introduced to the sacred knowledge of the present value of a future stream of cash flows.
Let's cue the music. All right, enough of that. Okay, here we are. Okay, I can figure out how to use this darn thing. Yeah, okay, I know. It's going to sound like Hindu Sanskrit at first. It's not going to make sense. But in actuality, folks, this stuff is really easy. Once you've done it enough times, the calculations are super simple once you've done them. And then eventually you'll figure out exactly what we're doing. It's one of those situations where the calculations come first and then the understanding comes afterwards. So let's read together on slide 17. The dividend discount models, they are used to value a stock on the basis of the present value of the future dividend streams the stock is projected to produce. In other words, we want to know what the dividends are worth. The stock is worth based on what dividends it will produce. And they go by various names, dividend valuation models, discounted cash flow models. If you recall from our previous presentation, we said the value of a stock is based on the present value of its future cash flows. Therefore, these dividend discount models should be extremely popular, right? Well, not always. During the 1990s, investors who adhered to these types of models were considered old-fashioned, outdated fuddy-duddies. I remember the showman Jim Cramer saying that anybody who actually believed that the intelligent investor was still relevant was just going to be left in the dust. The investors who followed these models weathered the 2000 to 2002 downturn very well. Dividends have become important again because dividends don't lie. Now, how did they do in 2008-09? No, everybody fell down, but still. These models, once you've done them, should, as I've said on numerous occasions, tilt the odds in your favor because you're going to be looking at stocks that produce income reliably and they grow that income, at least along with inflation and many better than inflation. So let's take a look at slide 18. Ah! It's math! It's scary! Relax. I told you at the beginning of the semester, all you need is a 99-cent calculator, and I'm not lying. The exponents that you see here, you're not even going to use. Don't just ignore them, okay? Ignore them. All right. So the purest incarnation of the dividend discount model says that the value of the stock is equal to the present value of all expected future dividend payments. Now, here's the formula, but again, relax, we're not going to use this formula. We're going to use a modified version that throws away all the exponents. But what you do to find the price at time zero, that's what P sub zero means, you take the dividend for year number one, and divide it by 1 plus K. Now, what does K stand for? Well, in baseball, it stands for strikeout. But no. In this case, it stands for our required rate of return. What are we looking for? What is our rate of return that we desire? Is it 5%, 8%, 12%? So you take the dividend for year number one and divide it by 1 plus 8% or 1 plus 5%. Just like we did 1 plus the growth rate in the previous. Yeah, same idea. And then you take the dividend for year number 2 and divide that by 1 plus the required rate of return squared. And then you take the dividend for year number 3, the 1 plus k to the third power, and you do that on into however many years you are interested in. And the example that they give you in the book, and it's on page 181 of the 7th edition, but it's close to that in all the other editions, is a company that creates 3 annual dividends of $100 per share. You're not a very realistic example, but hey, that's what they use. And they require a rate of return of 15%, which is outrageous in my humble opinion. But if we do, salud dinero, ay, no more. If we do that calculation, 100 divided by 1 plus 15%, 1.15, plus 100 divided by 1 plus 1.15 squared, plus 100 divided by 1.15 to the third power, we get about $228. So this stock should be worth $228. But how many businesses pay 3 annual dividends and then promptly go out of business? Plus, Payano, we keep using this term present value. What does present value mean? What is present value? Slide 19. The present value is the value today of a lump sum or series of payments to be received at some future date. So some of you remember future value. We did it in the Business 121, Financial Planning and Money Management. I gave it to you as an optional exercise in Chapter 1 of this class. And I said, just look at the answers. You don't have to do the calculations because we're going to do present value later on. It's the inverse, the opposite of future value. So what does future value tell us? Future value tells us if we put in an investment today, we put money into some investment today, what is it going to be worth in the future? So if we say we're going to get 8% for 10 years, we will use a future value multiplier that we'll see later on. There's the formula. You don't have to worry about it. It's 1 plus 8% to the 10 years. We would multiply that 10,000 times that future value multiplier, and that 10,000 will be worth in 8 years at 10 years at 8%, $21,589. But what if we know we're going to get $21,589 in 10 years, and we require a rate of return of 8%? Then the present value takes us back to today. Because the future, we know we're going to get, or we expect to get, $21,589. And it's simply the inverse. You put 1 divided by 1 plus 8% to the 10 years, and that present value multiplier is 0.4632. So we believe that if we're going to get $21,589 in 10 years, and we expect 8%, today it should be worth $10,000. So they're just two sides of the same coin. In finance and investments, present values tells us what the future value is worth today. So what would you rather have? Would you rather have $10,000 today or $21,589 in 10 years? Well, the answer is if your required rate of return is 8%, then those two are the same. $10,000 today is the same as $21,589 in 10 years at 8%. Now, if you change that required rate of return, it changes the present value. Are you with me? So that's the kicker. Some people say, well, where do you get the required rate of return? You decide. That's what you're after. That's what you want to receive from your investments. And some people are happy with 4 or 5%, and other people are happy with 6, 7%, and some people are trying for 10, 11, 12%. But remember, right, the higher the return, the more riskier the investment's going to be. So now we're going to use this present value to put a dollar amount on something that we believe we're going to get in the future. Okay? So if you didn't understand what the hell I just said, stop the presentation, go back and listen to it a few more times, and then realize that it is a little tricky. The words get in the way. But in reality, it's actually very simple. If you require a return of 8%, or you get 8%, in 10 years, your $10,000 will become $21,589. Or if you know you're going to get $21,589 in 10 years at 8%, today that is worth $10,000. Cool. So, did the formula, slide 20, did the formula for the dividend discount model scare you? This formula has the present value calculation built into it. We're not going to use it. We're going to use the present value tables, just as we used the future value tables back in Chapter 1, and you used the future value tables if you took Business 121, Financial Planning and Money Management. So we'll deal with that later, folks. We'll deal with that later. We'll take the dividend for year number one times the present value multiplier, PVM, for year number one, plus the dividend for year number two times the present value multiplier for year number two, plus the dividend for year number three times the present value multiplier for year number three, so on for as many years as we want to do it. So slide 21, if we do the exact same example over again, we go to the present value table, and it's on the class website, and it's in Canvas, and we look up 15% for 1 year, 15% for 2 years, 15% for 3 years. So, again, it's the same example, annual dividends of $100 for 3 years. And if you go across the table, and you don't have to do it now, we'll do it later, but if you go across the table to 15% down 1 year, you'll see that the present value multiplier is 0.870. If you go across the table for 15% and go down 2 years, you'll see that it's 0.756. If you go across the table for 3 years, go across the table to 15% and go down 3 years, you'll see it's 0.658. So you multiply those three annual dividends of $100 times the present value multiplier for year number one, the present value multiplier for year number two, the present value multiplier for year number three, and you get $87.70, $65.80. Add those three up, and you get $228.40, which is 8 cents away from the value we got back on slide 18. And why is that? Because the tables only go to three digits. If they went out to 10 digits, we would have the exact same number. So you see that? Do you understand? And I know it's a little tricky, but at 15%, what would you rather have? $87 today or $100 in 1 year? They're the same. Now, as soon as you go down to 12%, it changes. If you go down to 8%, it changes. 5%. And I'm only using 15% because that's what the book did, folks. I think it's outrageous. Don't do it. Don't expect to get 15% because that means you're taking very, very large bets and the chances of you losing are pretty great. But hey, you maybe do it every once in a while, just, you know, instead of going to Vegas. I shoot for 8, 9, 10%, as I've already told you, and that's pretty much where we'll stay. We'll stay between 6 and 10, maybe go up a little bit higher than that. So slide number 22. What I want you to do now, if you want to stop take a little break, I want you to go to the either class website or Canvas and download the document that says the formulas for chapter 6. They include the price formulas that we looked at in the previous presentation. So I want you to get the formulas, and then if you want to work along with us in the presentation, you can stop the presentation and do number 4. It's number 4 for the zero growth model, and number 5 and number 6. You can go along and stop the presentation and do the worksheet, or you can wait until afterwards and do the worksheet. It's up to you. But if you want to take some notes, print out the formula sheet and print out the worksheet number 1. But you don't have to, because in the face-to-face we would stop and do the problems, but we're not going to do that because there's a separate commentary, a separate answer key. You do that on your own, either by stopping the presentation and doing it or waiting until afterwards. So the first model that we'll use is a very simple model, and it's not covered in our book, and I understand why, because it's just so simple it doesn't make any sense, but it's a very simplistic case of the dividend discount model, and it's called the zero growth model. It assumes that the dividends will continue at a fixed rate indefinitely into the future. In other words, the dividends are not growing. They've been paying these number of dividends for a certain amount of time, and they will probably continue to pay them, and that's how it's a boring company, right? So what we do here is we take the annual dividends divided by our required rate of return. And remember, that's what we decide. We want 3, 6, 9%. We decide what our required rate of return is. So if we have a company that's paying us $3 per share and our required rate of return is 6%, we take $3 and divide it by 6% and we get $50 per share. We would be willing to pay $50 per share for this stock. Now this should look very familiar, right? Why? Because this is just another way to view the dividend yield that we calculated in the previous chapter. So slide number 23. You see, our formula says the value of the stock is equal to the annual dividend divided by the required rate of return. But the dividend yield is equal to the annual dividends divided by the market price of the stock. So what we're doing is we're basically swapping the value of the stock and the market price and the required rate of return with the dividend yield. And if you don't understand what I just said, don't worry about it. But in other words, we're valuing the stock almost exclusively for the dividend it pays. We don't care about growth, which is atypical, right? Most stock investors are looking to have their investment grow, but not these dividend hogs, as they're sometimes called, yield hogs. These are individuals who use this model, are looking at the stock just from the dividends and are very happy to be paid dividends into the future. So what's a real life example? Slide 24. Consolidated Edison. Have you ever heard of them? Remember Thomas Edison? Right. This is the electric company that services New York City. And it's called Con Ed. In New York, it's called Con Ed, Consolidated Edison. And as of the 20th of September, it was paying the market price was $82.60. And it's currently paying $2.76, and it's been paying that for years. That's what utilities do, right? They don't grow that fast. Some do when the area they're in is growing, but for the most part, you know, people come home, they take a shower, and they do the laundry and cook the dinner and heat the house, and that's it, right? So this model works great for utilities. And so when you do the worksheets, you'll see that there are utilities right where zero growth model would be. So if you see a utility in a worksheet or an assignment or an exam, you know to use the zero growth model. Now it's very interesting. Just recently, one of the students in our class, in the virtual office, George, right? You listening, George? Asked me about WWE, the World Wrestling Federation or something, World Wrestling. And sure enough, we're looking at the dividends, and they have been paying the same dividend for years. So there you go. Utilities and wrestling have a lot in common. But on the worksheets and the exam and the assignment, it'll be a utility. If our required rate of return is 8%, we take $2.76 of dividends divided by 8%, and that's equal to $34.50. So for us, the stock is overpriced, right? We see the stock price of $82.60, and we are looking for 8%, which is a little it's kind of unrealistic when you're talking about utilities to get 8%. We would expect it to be $34.50. So we're not happy. What if we change our required rate of return to 5%? Okay, it's a utility. We'll be happy with 5%. If we take the same $2.76 divided by 5%, we get $55.20. Darn, the stock is still too expensive for us at 5%. We see, with a market yield of $82.60, the dividend yield is 3.27%. So we have to be willing to accept 3.27% from our stock for it to be worthwhile to us. And this is what has happened, folks. This is what has happened to companies that used to pay 4, 5, 6%, like utilities, because bonds are paying so little these days. Investors are willing to bid up the price of utilities and railroads and food companies so that they're yielding 3, 2, 3, 4%. And that's because savings accounts are paying 0.5% if you're lucky, 0.1%. And bonds are paying, the 10-year bond is paying, 2.3 or something like that, 2.1 right now or somewhere around there. So bonds are not paying very much. So people are willing to take 3%. I'm not very happy with that for something like a utility. I want to get, if I'm going to only take 3%, I want a company that's at least growing, right? And we'll see those in a bit. Okay, so now is when we would stop in the face-to-face class and do problem number four, which is the zero growth model, and it's a utility. So can I get any more? Exactly. Can I get any more plainer than that? Okay. You understand? You see a utility. Which model you use? Zero growth model. Excellent. 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 Now, let's continue on slide 25. Now, this is one of my favorite models, but it has one of the dumbest names around. Constant perpetual growth model. It's from the Department of Redundancy Department. Right? Constant and perpetual, they mean the same things, right? Constant perpetual growth model. This assumes that the dividends will continue to grow at a specified rate perpetually into the future. And I love that name, that word, perpetually. When you say it, you get to spit on your friends. Perpetually. It's the same formula, right? If you go back and look at the zero growth formula, our zero growth formula is annual dividends divided by required rate of return. But the difference is now we have growth. Now we have the growth of dividends. Our dividends are not static. They're not staying the same. They're growing over time. So what we do is we add this term at the top, 1 plus the growth rate. Does that look familiar? That's what we did in the previous presentation. And below, we subtract the growth rate from the required rate of return. You got it? You understand? Right, so it's the same formula, but we've added these two little terms here to account for the growth of the dividend. So the example that they use in the 6th edition is on page 182, and then, of course, no, it should be the 7th edition. I don't remember. They're somewhere around page 180, depending on which edition you have. Is they have a company that's paying $10 a share, and they've been growing their dividends at 5% a year. So that means next year the dividend should be $10.50. Now, is it guaranteed? No, of course not. A company does not have to pay dividends. They don't have to grow the dividend. Even though they may have been doing it for 10 years, they could stop paying the dividend altogether. If our required rate of return is 15%, which again, dear students, I think is way too much, in my humble opinion, but let's do what the book does. If the required rate of return is 15%, then we plug in the numbers. The annual dividends times 1 plus the growth rate, 1 plus 5% is 1.05, divided by the required rate of return of 15%, which, of course, we decide what it is. We decide minus the growth rate of 5%. So $10 times 1.05 is $10.50. 15% minus 5% is 10%, or 0.1. So we would believe this stock should be worth approximately $105. And if it were, it's a potentially a good investment for us. If it were less, we'd have to say, well, you know what? We'll have to change our required rate of return. We'll have to accept less of a rate of return because it's not what we believe it should be worth. Make sense? Okay, good. So now let us take a look at some real life models. This is a company called 3M. Now, maybe you've heard of it, maybe you haven't, but boy, you've used their products for decades. Why? Because this is the company that makes Scotch tape and Post-it notes and 10,000 or 100,000 other different products. Minnesota Mining and Materials. Right? Nobody knows it as that name because they changed their name back in the 50s or 60s to 3M. And they're a company, very, very innovative company, folks. They make thousands of products, reflective tape and stuff that covers stuff, mostly all flat. You know? So the current market price as of the 20th of September 2017 was $210.30. They've been paying dividends of $4.70. They're paying $4.70. And let's assume that they're growing their dividends at, say, 8% per year. Our required rate of return is 13%, which I think is too high, but let's try it. So we plug in the numbers, $4.70 of dividends times 1 plus the growth rate, 1.08. Whoops, sorry about that. Go away. Get away. Divided by 13% minus 8%. 13% is our required rate of return. Minus the growth rate of 8%, that's 4.7 times 1.08, or 5.07660. That's what we expect the dividend to be next year, $5.07. Divided by 13 minus 8, or 5%, 0.05, and the price should be $100. What? Do we expect to get 13% from Minnesota Mining and Materials? Well, not according to this model. Excuse me. But what if we just change our required rate of return down to 10%? What if we say, you know what, we're happy with 10%, which I don't know about you, but I am very happy with 10%. It's the same formula, except we replace the 13% with 10%. So you have $4.07 times 1.08 divided by 10% minus 8%. Required rate of return minus the dividend growth rate of 8%. And so that's the same $5.07 or so in close, approximately. You don't have to get too close, folks. Divided by 0.02, 2%. And we believe the stock should be worth over $250. Not bad. It's selling for $210. This model is very sensitive to our choice of required rate of return. You see, you change the required rate of return a little bit, you know, just 3% from 13 down to 10, and boom, the numbers get very different. Do you think 3M is a good value? Well, let me ask you a question. How often do you use tape and Post-it notes, right? And do a little research. 3M has been a very good stock over the years, you know. They're a mining company and materials company, obviously, and so they're more cyclical. Sometimes they do great when everybody's buying new materials to build stuff and things. But they have a lot of materials that people use no matter what. So in some ways they're kind of defensive too. Let's take a look at another example. And McDonald's, right. They make hamburgers. It's a blue chip company. And on the 20th of September, they were selling for $159.87. They're currently paying $3.76 in annual dividends. And again, let's assume that the dividends are growing over 8%, around 8% per year. If our required rate of return is 13%, we take $3.76 times the 1.08, 1 plus the 8% growth rate, divided by the 13% minus 8%. If you need to stop the presentation and make sure you understand how I plug in these numbers, do, because it's really not that difficult. So $3.76 times 1.08 gives us about $4.06. So next year we expect the dividends to be $4.06. We divide that by the 13% minus 8% or 5%, 0.05, and we think the stock should be worth about $81, which it's selling for twice that, $159, $160. But if we simply lower our required rate of return to 10% and plug in the numbers again, $3.76 times 1.08 divided by 10% minus 8%, again, the same $4.06 now divided by 0.02, 2%, and whoopee, we think the stock should be worth $203. So the model says that McDonald's is undervalued if we require a 10% rate of return. Do you think people around the world will ever wake up to the fact that they're being sold an expensive and unhealthy combination of sugar, salt, and fat? No, neither do I. Every time I go by a McDonald's and smell that smell, I just think, what are you putting that stuff in your body for? And I am strange in that respect because I, and a lot of people go to McDonald's, obviously. They make a ton of money off of garbage. I mean, of food that destroys your liver and your intestines and your, actually more your colon, and then your what it does to your insides of your arteries, and I don't know how I got on this subject with some person. I have some Republican friends, and I don't know how we got on this topic, but we were talking about terrorism and how horrible it is, and I said, well, you know, it is horrible because we let the bums, we splash it across the news because that's what they want. They know that it's going to make the news, and they want to see how much news they can generate. But McDonald's has killed more people than terrorists. And he looked at me and said, yeah, but that's a choice. So it makes it all right? Okay, fine. Slide number 28. And if you love McDonald's, I apologize, but it's garbage, folks. I mean, they're selling you garbage and they're charging you a lot of money for it. I'm sorry. Let's take a look at another sacred cow of the United States of America, and that is Coca-Cola! Fizzy sugar water with a brown crayon stuck in it. The current market price was $45.78, currently paying $1.48 in annual dividends. Let's assume the dividends are growing around 8% per year. Our required rate of return is 13%. Again, something I think is way too high. But if we plug in the numbers, $1.48 times 1.08, 1 plus the 8% growth rate, divided by 13 minus 8%, 5%, that gives us about $1.60 divided by 5%, or about $32, which is, you know, a lot less than what the current price is. But if we simply lower our rate of return to 10%, then when we plug in the numbers, we find out that our model is telling us that Coke should be worth about $80. So maybe we need to do some more research about this company. In the United States, the average person drinks over 400 Cokes a year. Now, I have a hard time believing this, folks. I don't drink any. I think this stuff is terrible. It's really horrible on your teeth. It feels horrible. But I know that the folks in the Army and the Navy, they use it to clean battery terminals because they get plenty of it. They get, you know, it's great for battery terminals. And in China, the average is 38 per year. In India, it's 12. And 20 years ago, folks, they drank no Coca-Cola. And remember, there's four times as many people in China as in the United States, and over three times as many in India. But guess which company drinks the most Coke, huh? Do you know? You know which one? Yeah, sure you do. Ustedes que tienen parientes en México saben. Yes, Mexico drinks the most Cokes per person, over 700. And they are waking up to the fact that it's causing obesity and diabetes. And again, here's another one of the sacred cows. Whenever you say that, well, it's a choice. You don't want the nanny state telling people what to do. Oh, yeah, I'm paying health insurance, folks. And these people, you know, I'm going to find out how much it costs to take care of somebody who gets diabetes. There's a wonderful graphic in the 121 class that I stole off the Coca-Cola website, And they used to do this every year up until 2012, when they realized people like me were using it against them and showing the growth of Coca-Cola consumption around the world. I don't know if you're aware of this, but folks, but in Asia and Latin America and Africa, they have what is often called the starvation gene. Caucasians, not so much, the starvation gene is a gene that says, you know, you better hang on to this because lean times are coming. But it also increases your tendency to get diabetes by a factor of 10. So, hey, get off your soapbox, Piano. You want to drink Coke, drink it once a month, okay? But not every day. Some people drink 3 Cokes a day. Anyway, enough. But is it a good investment? Yes, because they're selling you fizzy sugar water with a crayon dipped in it. Slide number 29, General Electric, another blue chip company with a current market price of $24.32, currently paying 96 cents in annual dividends, and let's again assume that the dividends have been growing around 8% per year. What if our required rate of return is 13%? Let's see, 96 cents times 1.08 divided by 13% minus 8%, $1.03 or so, divided by 0.05 is $20.74. Not very good. Oh, no. How about 10%? If we plug it in the numbers with 10%, then it turns out that this is a pretty darn good price. 96 cents times $1.08 is about $1.04 or something there. Divided by 10% minus 8%, 0.02, and you get almost $52. If we're happy with 10%, GE appears to be a good deal. But GE went through a near-death experience in the Great Recession. Right. You think of GE, you think of light bulbs and washing machines and jet engines and what else do they make? Locomotives and power plants they make, you know, unbelievable. They make diamonds. But at 2007, by that time, they were making more money off their financial businesses, because they have tons of financial businesses. And what happened in the Great, the finance companies all fell down. They took a big injection of cash from Mr. Warren Buffett, Mr. Smart Warren Buffett, and they were very happy. I think it was $3 billion or so, maybe $5 billion, I'm not sure. But Mr. Buffett swooped in and bought a ton of GE. And they cut their dividend from $1.24 down to 40 cents. That's after decades of raising and growing the dividend. But then in 2010, as we started coming out of the Great Recession, they started raising the dividend. 48 cents, 56 cents, 60, 68, 76, 88, 92, and now they're up to 96 cents. And they say that, you know, they're going to pursue an aggressive dividend raising program. You know, they can't tell you exactly what they're going to do because they don't know. It's the future. But they're committed to raising their dividend again, and I assume they're trying to get back to $1.24. Cool. Would you buy the GE? Okay. Altria. I mean, who is Altria? Well, that's the company that makes Marlboros and Virginia Dims. Right. Current market price, $61.22. They're currently paying $2.64 of annual dividends. And again, let's assume that the dividends have been growing around 8% per year. If we start with 13%, then it's $2.64 times $1.08 divided by 13% minus 8%. And I hope you've done this calculation enough times so that it's very simple, because it's not hard. And you get $57. Well, close. That's close to 61, but, you know, not by much. Whereas if we change it to 10%, we get $2.64 times times 1.08, divided by 10% minus 8%, $2.85 of dividends divided by 0.02, $142. What a buy! If you conveniently ignore the fact that tobacco kills 400,000 Americans each year, would you invest in a company whose product, when used as directed, kills its consumers? Well, as a matter of fact, yes. It's very good stock, folks. And there's another one called Philip Morris International, which used to be part of Altria, but they spun it off because that company sells the Marlboros outside the United States. Figure that one out. It's based in the United States. Doesn't sell any products in the United States. It sells all their products outside the United States. Plus, they spun off Kraft several years ago because they used to own Kraft. They used to own Nabisco. They used to own Oscar Mayer and Miller Brewing and Post Cereal. It's been a very good stock, folks. Would you buy Altria? I remember a wonderful interview by a gentleman by the name of Louis Rukeyser. Now, he passed away several years ago, but he ran a show on PBS, that, you know, incredibly Bolshevik communist channel, PBS, about investing for over 30 years, right, when none of the other channels were interested in investing. Now they all got their financial whatever. But he was interviewing a gentleman who was a money manager, mutual fund manager, and who was very happy with Philip Morris, which that's what it was called at the time. Now it's called Altria. And the gentleman was a Mormon. And Mr. Rukeyser said, now, I forget his name. He said, you're a Mormon, aren't you? He said, oh, yes, Mr. Rukeyser, I'm a Mormon. And you don't even smoke, and you don't think drinking is a good idea, right? He said, well, yes, that's true. How do you... you know, how do you figure this out? How do you work this out? How do you justify it? And he said, well, sir, there are no secrets here. Everyone knows that smoking is very dangerous for your health. But are we going to make smoking illegal? I don't think so. We probably as a society should do steps to curtail its usage. But in the meantime, my job is to maximize shareholder value, maximize the return for my investors. So I see a very good investment. I'm going to invest in it. Some people say, no, I will not invest in a company that sells cigarettes or alcohol. And we call those social investors, social conscious investors, socially responsible investing. We touched on that in the previous presentation. So would you buy Altria? Okay, let's continue. Hey, who is that?
I know.
Who are you?
You know who it is.
It's my conscience.
Come clean.
Come clean about what?
Fess up.
Fess up about what?
Where did you get the assumed dividend growth, huh?
I made them up.
Huh?
I made them up. All these companies are growing their dividends better than 8%.
That's better.
Oh! I hate it when your conscience gets in the way of a good presentation. Yes, dear students, the constant perpetual growth model is very sensitive to the assumed growth rate of dividends. And the recent growth rates of dividends of 3M, Coke, GE, McDonald's, and Altria are all 8% or higher. You know, Coke and McDonald's are about 8%, but Altria is 10. 3M is 11.4%, and GE is 12.1%. But the model doesn't work if the required rate of return is equal to or less than the dividend growth rate. You get very strange numbers. Division by zero or negative prices. So therefore, we should actually raise our expected rates of returns for all these companies. All of these companies are better buys than what the model is telling us for 10% or 13% rates of returns. You see, that's why I'm a big fan, personally, of large companies that have been growing their dividends for decades, folks, or a long time. Why? Because these companies stand the test of time. Sure, buy a Tesla or a Netflix or a GoPro. But these are the stalwarts, as Peter Lynch calls them. And they're not alone. I mean, there aren't that many, folks. I mean, there are a lot of blue chip companies. And if you do the Chapter 6 bonus assignment, you'll see a list of many of them. So check out ExxonMobil, Procter & Gamble, United Technologies, Honeywell, Johnson Controls, Intel, Microsoft, Ford, GM. There are many companies that have been raising their dividends for years at pretty darn good rates. Now, is it a guarantee? No. But as we said, we're trying to tilt the odds in your favor. Cool? Okay, great. This is one of my favorite models, and here is where we would stop in the face-to-face class and work on problem number 5, it is? Right. So when you see a problem in the worksheet or on the assignment or in the exam where the dividends have been growing at a certain rate of 6%, 8%, or whatever, 4%, you know which model to use, right? Constant perpetual growth model. Slide number 32. The book then goes into two more models that we're going to ignore. The constant growth model, which assumes dividends will continue to grow at a specified rate for a specified number of years. So again, we're just taking the previous model, that's the previous model, the dividend times 1 plus the growth rate divided by the required rate of return minus the growth rate, and then multiplying this term to account for a number of years. Do you have to know how to do this one? No. It's overkill, in my humble opinion. It takes the constant perpetual growth rate one step further, adding a term to account for a constant growth for a number of years. But, yeah, you don't need it. It's to me, it's way too precise. And what we want to do is try to ignore any precision. We don't want to act like these numbers are going to be, that's exactly what they're going to be, because they're not. We're just sort of, we're predicting the weather, you know, there's a chance it'll be this, but we're probably not going to be right. So ignore this one. And then the book, because it's college, they take it one step further, and they use the two-stage dividend growth model, which assumes that dividends will continue to grow at a specified rate into the future, presumably the fast growth stage, and then grow at a second, presumably slower growth rate once the company matures. It's the previous growth model with plenty of more garbage in folks many decades ago. Benjamin Graham warned against using overly sophisticated mathematical models to value stocks. He said, look, any model, any strategy that takes human judgment out of the equation is simply wrong and is doomed to fail. And so, yeah, it may look impressive, especially to those who love math, but it has some serious problems, folks. It's very difficult to accurately predict future dividend growth during the initial fast growth stage of a stock. Usually, companies don't pay significant dividends while they're growing rapidly. And then all of a sudden, in the case of Microsoft, with sitting on, they were sitting on like $70, $80 billion of cash. I mean, how many more times can they write Word? Every time they do, they screw it up. And so they decided, okay, let's start paying dividends. And they started with a very generous dividend. So it wasn't fast growth. It was, here you go, folks. Everybody gets $3 today, bingo. And then they started growing their dividends, and they've been doing that now lately, because now they're no longer a growth company. Now they're a blue chip company that have their roots deep in the economy, and they grow along with the economy. Okay, so these last two, the growth model and the variable growth model, just forget them. Don't worry about them. Slide number 34. Observations of the dividend discount models. Oh, how do you use them for a company that isn't paying any dividends? Well, the simple answer is you can't, right? If they're not paying any dividends, that's zero. And so zero times anything is zero, right? The constant perpetual growth rate is usually an unrealistic assumption, except for the stalwarts, except for the very small number of companies in that rarefied air which have their roots deep in the economy. And the dividend growth rates are very difficult to estimate, folks. Remember, dividends are not mandatory. A company can can choose to grow their dividends. They can stop their dividends if they want. But with large cap, well-established companies, historical growth rates may be useful. In fact, it is my humble opinion that they are. But with fast-growing companies and new industries, forget it. It's impossible. But the problems of the dividend discount models notwithstanding, repeat after me.
The value of a stock.
The value of a stock.
Is based on the present value.
Is based on the present value.
Of its future cash flows.
Of its future cash flows. And so, now, go back over, read this again, listen to it again, watch it again, and do the problems 4 and 5 in worksheet number 1, then do them in worksheet number 2, and then do them in the assignment sheet, okay? Because the calculations are very simple. The concepts are a little tricky, but once you've done them enough times, it should be second nature to you. Really, folks, really. And this is the easy part. Doing all these calculations are actually the easy part. Then you got to decide whether to buy the company or not. Now, did you like that? I hope so. But it's going to get one better. Because when you come back, dear students, when we come back to our final presentation of Chapter 6, you are going to learn yet another dividend discount model that puts all the others to shame. And once and for all, in my humble opinion, will tilt the odds in your favor so that you will have your eyes wide open when you choose a company. And I wish you tremendous success and a little bit of luck, too, always helps. See you in our next presentation of Chapter 6, dear students.